Happy holidays and happy new year, everyone. Today, we're taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations we've had this last year in regards to the Delphi murder case and the charges against Richard Allen.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi,
featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
Bob, let's go back in time a little bit here and refresh ourselves as to why Richard Allen was initially charged in this case.
Richard Allen had put himself at the scene by giving a voluntary statement either the day before or the day of or the day after the girls went missing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So like he wasn't like brought into the police station. There was a resource officer that was stationed outside of a grocery market, because at that point they had said to the community, because Delphi is small, look, if you were out at the bridge, okay, if you were out there at the trail today, we need to know, because we need to figure out everyone that was out there. We want to see if you saw anything, if you noticed anything, if you heard anything. So basically everybody in the community starts going to law enforcement and say, okay, I was there. This is the time I was there. I didn't see or I saw something, or I did see something. So when you look at the probable cause affidavit for the arrest, there are multiple individuals that saw there was a group of three girls that saw a guy walking on the tracks. And Monadnock Bridge is like an old train trestle. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's tracks that go over a river. Okay. So there's three girls that claim that they saw a guy. And anybody who follows the case, you know, the famous picture, the bridge guy picture.
Yes.
Okay. And
yep.
It's the guy, and you can see how he's dressed. It's very blurry. It looks like they blew it up because it was taken from Libby's Snapchat, who was brave enough to actually video this.
Yeah.
When it was going down. And, you know, then there's the famous sound where he says, down the hill, mm-hmm. You know, down the hill, girls. And so we get to this situation where Tony Liggett, in creating his timeline, to talk to multiple witnesses who then build a timeline saying that this is when they saw this individual walking on the bridge and this is what he was wearing. There's another witness that says that they saw an individual walking away from the bridge and that he was muddy and bloody. And that's what Tony Liggett says. There's another individual that claims that they saw an individual, they describe him. And, you know, in the affidavit for the arrest, Tony Liggett says that the person identified that person as looking like Richard Allen.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes out in this pleading that two of the witnesses didn't say either of those things, nothing about muddy and bloody, that he wasn't wearing a blue coat, but that he was wearing a tan coat, because you can see in the bridge guy picture, he's got a blue coat on. The bridge guy does.
Yeah.
The person she saw had a tan coat, but in his affidavit, he said that he had a blue coat. She also, like the other person that they had, a woman named Sarah, basically goes out and says, look, he didn't look anything like the guy.
Yeah.
Okay. So what they're alleging is that Tony Liggett just flat out lied about mm-hmm. two of these statements, which if that's true, and they're going to put these people on the stand at this Franks hearing. And if that comes true, the analysis then becomes, can the warrant, if you take out the lies for the probable cause, there are lies. If you take that out, does the warrant still stand? Is there still enough probable cause to get the warrant to search his house? Okay.
Yeah.
Because if the judge finds that there is not, everything that was found in that search is tossed. It's suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge deal, you know, and like people are upset because they go into great detail, like 10, 12, 13 pages of how it would be impossible for Richard Allen as an individual to have killed both girls.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm talking like point by point by point by point. It's like, and people are very upset about it. Like they're far with it. So, you know, the question is going to be, did they, you know, and then they filed it unsealed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which, like, we know because the judge sealed it 2 hours later.
Yeah.
She's going to be upset.
Sure.
She was upset that it was filed unsealed. So the question becomes, is Judge Gull going to be so irritated by the fact that they filed it unsealed that it's going to cloud her judgment a little bit? I would hope not.
Mm-hmm.
She seems to be a very capable judge. I would hope that she'll rule on the law And, you know, I mean, ultimately she can find that, look, I think that there was enough there aside from the timeline. Mm-hmm. I would disagree with her. I always thought it was a thin PCA. It was like, we've talked about this in terms of comparing it to Koberger in this one. There's a vast difference. And we've seen how Koberger's gotten picked apart. Mm-hmm. And then that's like what you would consider at first blush to be a pretty strong PCA in terms of probable cause. This one was much thinner. It was basically, they found this guy's report, Richard Allen's report, 5 years after he gave the statement. And they're getting him in prison, which is where he's being held right now instead of a jail pending trial, mm-hmm. based on the fact that he was present.
You're consuming the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast, dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.